On this episode of Still Loading, Naughty Dog Part 1. When you're a kid, you always get invited to the birthday parties of your classmates from school. It didn't really matter if you knew them well at all, you just kind of got invited because that was the thing to do. And I remember one such party that I was invited to, and when I arrived, in the strangest of all places, in the closet of their house, they had a TV and a Sony PlayStation hooked up. Of course, this was ages ago, and my memory may be way off because even just saying this out loud makes me question which room it was actually in. But regardless, they had a TV and a PlayStation hooked up. There was someone else playing it when I saw, and I still remember to this day the game that was on. Crash Bandicoot 2 Cortex Strikes Back. I didn't really know too much about Crash Bandicoot at the time. That was my first time seeing the series at all, and it was soon my turn to play, and the game grabbed me. I don't remember which level it was specifically. It could have been Crash Dash from the first warp room or Crash Crush from the second, but I remember running away from that damn boulder. I had not played a game at that point in my life that both simultaneously excited and overjoyed me, but scared the shit out of me. And I was scared mainly because the boulder was chasing me. I remember going home and wanting a PlayStation so badly, but either my parents said it was too much money or I already had the N64 at that point and they wouldn't let me get it. My memory's a little fuzzy on the details, but what does stick out to me is that this was my first encounter with Crash Bandicoot 2, a game that was developed by the game studio Naughty Dog. Naughty Dog is now known as one of the most prolific game studios of all time, and I wanted to take a deep dive into their origins. Naughty Dog was first formed in 1986 by Jason Rubin and Andy Gavin. Their first game, Math Jam, released for the Apple II computer. But to look at the company as a whole, we must first look at its creators. This is the history of Naughty Dog, Part 1, Andy Gavin. Andy Gavin was born in 1970 and grew up in the Washington, D.C. area. He was enamored with a myriad of things: science fiction, fantasy novels, arcade games, Dungeons and Dragons, pretty much anything, you know, that we know now as like geek-related he was into. He was a little young to play D&D, but he still loved to read the books and the game modules all the same. Besides D&D, he was also a big fan of computers. He would go to a computer store and saw an Apple II running the game Akalabeth World of Doom and was just in complete awe of it. And from that little moment, that tiny moment, a seed was planted. And a little bit after venturing into that computer store in 1980, his science teacher brought into his class a Heathkit H8 that her husband built. For those of you like me who have no idea what a Heathkit H8 is, it was a microcomputer released in 1977. Microcomputers are basically what we know computers to be today. That description is a bit of a stretch, but if you are truly curious, it's a deep rabbit hole to fall down. And besides, this episode isn't on microcomputers, it's an episode on Naughty Dog. So his teacher brought in a Heathkit H8. One last strange tidbit about this microcomputer: the way it stored data was not on a hard drive like we are used to, but on a cassette tape. So his teacher handed out a sheet of paper with computer programming commands, specifically in the computer programming language of BASIC. Andy poured over the sheet, studying it thoroughly, and then wrote out a first draft of a text-based RPG where you explored and fought orcs and trolls for treasure. During lunch, he would type in and debug the game and eventually got his friends to help as playtesters. In his own words, "It may seem overly ambitious to try and recreate D&D as one's first program, but it illustrates the programmer principle of program what you love." Everything changed when his best friend got a new Apple II Plus. This was an update of the original Apple II computer with a whopping 48K of RAM. Oh my gosh, technology has come so far. Andy then set off on a quest to convince his parents to buy him one as well. For 9 or 10 months, he continuously harassed his parents in any way that he could to convince them to buy one. He offered to mow the lawn for free, tried pitching the accounting software you could get with the computer, and so much more. In fact, when I was researching this, he includes the specific month and year his parents bought the Apple II, January 1981. It was that big to him. So when the computer was finally bought, they also picked up that accounting software. His father never really used it, so Andy pretty much had free reign over the computer. One of the quotes I found from him while researching was, "Once I was victorious, January 1981, we got the accounting software, but he never used it, leaving me to my own devices on the machine, and I think I kept getting paid for the lawn. Still, this illustrates another important programmer principle, persistence." Once the Apple II arrived, Andy would spend hours on it. Practically all of his free time was spent tinkering on it. He taught himself to program, he played games, he used every piece of software on it to be able to understand the system inside and out. He would even recreate his favorite arcade games by programming them on the computer using BASIC. This was not only used to play those games for free, but also as a teaching tool. Each new game programmed offered a different challenge. It was small incremental movement, but it provided Andy the building blocks to become a full-fledged game designer. He continued to make games this way, hundreds of them. And then, in 1982, he met Jason Rubin, who could also program. His games looked a lot better than Andy's did, but would frequently crash. Andy's, on the other hand, were much more technically sound, but didn't look as impressive. This would prove to be a match made in heaven, and the two would start working on games together. The first game they attempted to work on was never actually published. Andy and Jason began working on a one-for-one port of Nintendo's arcade hit Punch-Out. This wasn't just simply them copying the game style either. They copied the art assets and all. However, they were also only 14 at the time, so it's not like they had the source code to base this port off of. Their unofficial port was made pixel by pixel. And oddly enough, the reason the game was never released was not because Nintendo caught wind of it. Rubin's father was actually an intellectual property lawyer and told them it was illegal to do what they were doing. Though, that didn't stop them from continuing. What actually stopped the production was a common mistake. When they tried making a backup of the game, they accidentally deleted it. And thus, their Punch-Out port is lost forever. Now here is where I'm going to diverge from Naughty Dog's full history. This would normally be the place where I start talking about all the games they developed, but that is going to be for another portion of this Naughty Dog history series. Instead, to give you just a little bit of a taste of what that future episode will cover, while in high school, Andy and Jason created and sold three games, Math Jam, Ski Crazed, and Dream Zone. But, like I said, we're going to be covering all of Naughty Dog's games in a future episode of this retrospective or series. So for now, let's talk about college. Andy attended Haverford College in Pennsylvania, and strangely did not major in computer programming. Instead, he graduated with double major honors in the fields of neurobiology and behavioral sciences. Despite working on all of this, he still had time to make games with Jason, and the pair got two games published by Electronic Arts during this time, Keef the Thief and Rings of Power. He attended graduate school at MIT in their Artificial Intelligence Laboratory PhD program. He learned a number of amazing things here, including programming actual robots, but probably the most important thing he learned here was his love of the programming language Lisp. His skill in using the Lisp language was one of the main reasons Naughty Dog games became so technologically advanced, and while at Naughty Dog, he developed two Lisp dialects that they used for game development. On a side note, learning all this is just blowing my mind. My computer language knowledge is very limited, but it fascinates me that even computer languages can have dialects like our spoken language does. Okay, end the side note. Now, here unfortunately is going to be a large gap in Andy's history, mainly because these were his Naughty Dog years. He was with the company from 1984 until 2004. These years will be covered on another part of the Naughty Dog history series, like I said before, so let's jump back in when he had just left Naughty Dog. In 2006, Andy partnered once again with his friend Jason Rubin to create another company. It was called Flector, and it was a short-lived company, but not because it failed. In fact, it succeeded. The company developed software that would let you edit small videos in a web browser. It was more robust than iMovie, and it was all in your browser. The endeavor did so well that the company was sold by its partners to Fox in 2007, where it ran up until 2008. Since leaving Flector, Andy has dipped his toes in a number of things. In 2008, Andy and Jason dabbled in making a handful of iPhone and Facebook games under the name Monkey Gods, but they didn't spend too much time making them. Andy moved on to become a writer, and to date he has published two novels, The Darkening Dream and Untimed, released in 2011 and 2012 respectively. Andy is currently married and living in Los Angeles with his wife, son, and his dog Osiris, which, by the way, is a fucking badass name for a dog. So, thank you all for listening to this first episode of my Donnie Dog history series. As of now, I'm not 100% sure of how many parts this is going to be, but I can tell you with confidence it will at least be three. If you liked what you heard today, please consider leaving a rating and review in the iTunes store or whichever podcatching app you're using. Also, remember to subscribe for more content. And if you want to get even more Still Loading content that's released a bit more frequently than the podcast is, check out the website stillloadingpodcast.com. There's a blog on there that is updated every Friday. And it's not just me writing it. My friends and I write blog posts and try to post at least once a week. So check it out if that interests you. Please check out all the great shows on the Podbeard Network, as also the Podbeard Network sponsor, Seat Giant. Seat Giant is a website where you can buy tickets for your favorite concerts, sporting events, plays, musicals, and more. I've personally used them to go see an NHL game, and I can attest the prices are good, and the site is easy to use. And if you use the promo code Podbeard at checkout, you'll save a little extra as well. Once again, that promo code is Podbeard, P-O-D-B-E-A-R-D. And finally, just some quick shout-outs. Shout-out to everyone in the Podbeard Network. Go check out everything they have to offer, podbeardnetwork.com. You can check out everyone on there. Some friends of mine, Erica over at the Apex and the Abyss. It's a great true crime podcast. My friends over at the No Geeks Allowed podcast. That's K-N-O-W, No Geeks Allowed. It's a great geek-centered show, and the two hosts, Brian and James, are so freaking funny. My buddy, also named Josh, has a YouTube channel called Firespin Gaming. He makes game hunting videos, like yard sale hunting videos. Go check his stuff out. He actually, upon recording this, he just posted his first episode of the 2019 game hunting season, which I have not watched yet, but it's queued up for as soon as I finish recording and editing this thing. Also, shout out to the Drinks with Larry crew. They're a bunch of funny-ass comedians, so go check their stuff out. And not shout outs, but my personal recommendations. I've been kind of like talking about these podcasts for a couple months now, but I'm really digging the Super Mercado Bros podcast and the Singing Mountain podcast. Those are both video game music podcasts I definitely recommend checking out. And if you like video game speedrunning, check out the podcast The Frame Savers. And that should do it. So thank you all once again for listening. Hope you like this episode. If you like these kind of history deep dives, let me know. I would love to do more of them. So that's about it. So thank you all once again, and I will see you all next time.